Zacchaeus. The biblical scholar H. King Omeg wrote, "We could call Zacchaeus' story the gospel in sycamore." And he goes on to say, "Seamy human nature is confronted by the unflagging divine affection for sinners. The outcome is a metanoia, profound change or conversion that only God can bring about." It's a helpful insight, I think, the encapsulation of the gospel in this story. We have the sinful humanity, we have the confrontation with God when the eyes of Jesus and the eyes of Zacchaeus lock. We have the conversion, and we have the salvation that comes from it. But you know, all things considered, Zacchaeus is not very good material, is he, at best? It's funny the way God does that, and I shall speak to him sharply when my turn comes. I mean, look at David and Jacob. And now Zacchaeus. By profession, a tax collector. Now, the IRS is not exactly popular in our own day, but in Zacchaeus' day, it was much worse. Rome lived off the taxes, the tribute money it imposed on all of its many conquered peoples, and in order to collect those taxes, Rome employed local citizens as tax collectors. Simple enough. The local tax collector had to make sure that Rome got all it demanded. And whatever the tax collectors could get in over and above the taxes was theirs to keep. You can see where this is going, can't you? Zacchaeus was one of those. And like all the rest, he was very unpopular. He was also very rich. So put two and two together. You know he defrauded people to no small degree. And furthermore, they knew it. Small wonder that when we meet him in this wonderful story, he is unsuccessful in getting anyone to move over a bit to let him get in so he can see Jesus pass through Jericho. See, nobody would give him an inch. And he was short of stature, so he could not see over the people in front of him. And I sympathize with that very much, because when I came to the United States, I was your average Englishman, 5'9" tall. And then I worked first in Arlington with all those people at Arlington College with the football players and whatnot in the congregation, 6'6" and 6'7". I couldn't see a thing most of the time. Zacchaeus was shut out of the parade, wasn't he? Just shut out. And maybe the people in the crowd were amused to see him struggle to get a view. And the more so when he had to climb a tree in order to get a view at all. Even then, he's not in an advantageous place. His view is obstructed by tree limbs and leaves, and at best, he can look down on the crowd. So there is precious little chance of Jesus noticing him. He is effectively ostracized, even with his last move. And what about that crowd? People are in crowds for all sorts of reasons, of course. I'm sure that crowd was no different to crowds that we see in our own time. There are the gawkers, the rubberneckers, who just are there for something to do because there's something going on, so we may as well go and look. And then there are the sick and the maimed and the beggars and such who have heard of Jesus and his power to heal and are there in desperate hope for a cure. Maybe the word has gotten out that there was a woman who touched him as he walked by, and she was cured of an issue of blood. Perhaps if his shadow would just pass over the person that they had brought to be healed, a miracle. There were also those who were there who were not physically sick, no identifiable malady, as it were, just maybe sick in heart, sick in soul, and maybe that's worse. Anyway, theirs may be another and greater need. Who knows? Zacchaeus is well enough to climb the tree. So we may deduce that whatever it is the matter with him, it's not physical. But something must be wrong. Why else would man in his position come at all? So we have the scene set. All you have to do is add a liberal dose of noise and dust and the cries of peddlers and the animal noises featuring everything from cattle to chickens. Noisy, smelly, dirty, and that's it. It's life in the raw. And as we know in the story, Jesus comes by on his way to Jerusalem and he looks up and sees Zacchaeus. He looks up, their eyes meet. And he calls out to him, "Zacchaeus, come down. I must stay at your place tonight." Now, Jesus has been working his ministry long enough by now for a sizable cadre of the local establishment to have taken umbrage at him and his message. He's been around too long, he's done too many things for it not to be sizable. So no wonder they were delighted by what he said and what he did. You could hear the murmur. He was said to be a prophet, and some say he said it of himself. But what sort of prophet can he be when he speaks to Zacchaeus, a known sinner and some say a traitor? One who does deals with the enemy. One is known, is one not, by the company one keeps. Zacchaeus gets down from the tree and comes over to Jesus, waiting for him in the road, and he says, "Half of my possessions I give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone, I restore what I took fourfold." Now, those that heard that, there must have been a little group around that did, must have been dumbstruck by what they heard. Perhaps they identified it and said, "Wow, that's a miracle." After all, you see, the Jewish law required only that he restore whatever he stole and pay back anything he had gained by deceit. That was the rule. And here he is giving away 50% of his capital and offering four times value in reparation. It is amazing. It is a miracle. But you see, for me, reading this story, I thought, that's a miracle, but there is another miracle here also. For me, the miracle occurred a bit earlier than when Zacchaeus started doling out his money. It occurred when Zacchaeus looked into the face of Jesus and was changed, utterly changed. The man who came down from the tree was not the same man who climbed up into it. Zacchaeus had been changed, converted. He was a new man in Jesus Christ. That, for me, is the miracle in this story. The miracle of faith that makes old new. Zacchaeus' generous actions are not those of the first Zacchaeus, the one who shinned up the tree. They are those of the new second Zacchaeus, the man who comes down converted. What has Jesus done here? He tells us. He sees that Zacchaeus is a changed man, and he proclaims, and these are his words, Today, salvation has come to this house, because he too is a son of Abraham. He always was, but a rejected son of Abraham. But now he is converted. God has reached down and touched Zacchaeus and changed him. In God's eyes, Zacchaeus is no longer an outcast, a pariah among his own people. He has been healed, cleansed, restored, accepted, honored for who he is. A new man in Christ Jesus. And almost as an aside to the crowd, you'll notice, Jesus adds, "For the Son of Man came to seek out and save the lost." Now that, you see, is Jesus' ministry, isn't it? It's the ministry we too inherit from him, seeking out and saving the lost. So there's the miracle in this lovely old story. Now there are many spiritual messages that may be drawn from this story, and for me, I chose these three. Zacchaeus went to see the Lord. He made an effort. He went to see the Lord, just as did the Greeks who encountered the disciples, you remember, and asked, "Sir, we would see Jesus." Zacchaeus knew there was something he lacked that Jesus might give him. The sad thing is that most, if not all, the crowd would have prevented him in some way, either by blocking his view or whatever it took, because he was deemed unworthy. Push him away. Don't let him get there. In the eyes of Jesus, contrastingly, nobody is unworthy. Nobody is unwanted. Nobody is undesirable. It is a profound lesson for us, one that we must not miss, because it applies to us and the way in which we welcome the stranger within our gates. Two, learn to recognize a miracle when you see one. And it would be a good place to start with yourself by remembering it was by a miraculous spiritual act that you were made a member of Christ's body and an heir of the kingdom of heaven. Call it the miracle at the font, if you like. Don't underestimate baptism. It's so easy to make it an afternoon event instead of the center of our lives, which it is. The doors of the cathedral swung open. The organ was crashing inside the church. The processional cross came out, gold cross with the two acolytes carrying it, solemnly and slowly through the doors and out, followed by a long choir that had just sung themselves hoarse in the service, followed by one young man who had just been ordained priest, followed by the bishop who had ordained him. In the overwhelming excitement and exaltation of the moment, the brand new priest said, "This is the greatest day in my life." The bishop said, "Not so. The greatest day in your life was the day of your baptism. On that day, more was done for you than ever can be done again." Mark well. By your life's decisions is the third one I want to talk to you about. By your life's decisions, by who and what you are expressing the equivalent to Zacchaeus' gifts. Not 50% of this and 10% of that. That is not the way to look at it. Your life should now be a response to the gift you have been given. That lovely Christmas carol, "In the Bleak Midwinter," expresses it perfectly in the last stanza. It reads, "What can I give him, poor as I am? If I were a shepherd, I would bring a lamb. If I were a wise man, I would do my part. Yet what I can, I give him. I give my heart. And that's it, isn't it? Our lives, yours and mine, are to be lived as a response to God for all we have received in baptism and in our life together in the holy community of the church. Jesus said, "Today salvation has come to this house." May he say that of each and every one of us today and every day, world without end.